This is 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick in Washington, sitting in for Joshua Johnson today. Laughter is known as the universal language, but does comedy always translate? The new Netflix special, Comedians of the World, explores this very question. It showcases stand-up performances from 47 comedians from all across the globe. Many of those performances aren't in English. So the question is, do laughs come as easily with the subtitles on? Nicole Byer is one of the American comedians featured in this special. She's also host of another Netflix show called Nailed It. Joshua sat down with Nicole a few weeks ago. Here's part of their conversation.
So as I told you before we started taping, you ain't well. You ain't well. But I have to say, that was one of the things I really enjoyed about your special. And I wonder how you began to find your comedic voice. You joke a lot about sex, about being fat, in ways that are really, like, between the eyes that we don't hear very much. How did you kind of come to that point as a comedian?
Well, I am a fat woman who does have sex, and I guess I started thinking about myself through the lens of how people view me, and a lot of it came from, I would try to tell fat jokes, and people would be like, you're not fat, you're beautiful, and it's like, I am. You see me standing up here. I say what I am, and you're saying I'm not. So let's try to break that down a little bit and try to understand why fat is such a bad word and why it has such a negative connotation. And I'm not trying to reclaim the word, but just explore why people hate it so much and why it's so negative. And then I have a weird little brain, and the way I filter things is not the way other people do. So I do think I have a unique voice.
I'm interested in how you got started in comedy. Was this the kind of a stage, the Just for Laughs stage, that you had envisioned playing on when you kind of got into stand-up? Or what was your expectation when you started?
I don't think I had any I just wanted to get good. I think when I started doing comedy 10 years ago, and I started at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater doing improv and sketch there. And even when I started doing that, there wasn't a true end goal. I just wanted to learn how I was funny, why I was funny, how to maximize my funniness, how to stay truthful to what I think is funny. And then from sketch and improv, it evolved to doing stand-up because I was on a show called Girl Code on MTV, which gave me a really great platform. And then people wanted me to come do stand-up at, like, colleges. And at the time, I wasn't doing stand-up. And my manager at the time was like, you should figure out a way to do it. Why don't you just, you know, make some premises with your characters that you were doing in sketch, which, you know, wasn't the best jokes, but it was a means of a ways to figure out how to do stand up. So like the second or third show I did was like a half hour at a college. And it wasn't like, looking back, I have the recording. It's not the best, but like those jokes evolved into something that I'm super proud of. I have a weird, interesting journey to stand up.
What started that journey? Were you the kind of kid who got a lot of laughs growing up, or how did this journey start?
I've always been a very loud person. My mother used to always say, Nicole, there's a time and place. This is not the time or place. Please be quiet. I would, you know, try to make jokes in church, and that's truly not the time or the place.
No.
My grandmother used to always say, you tickle me. She's from Barbados, so she would just have a lot of isms that aren't very American. And one of them was, you tickle me, to mean you're being funny. So I just spent a lot of time trying to get my grandmother to say, oh, you tickle me, because that would make me happy. And then in high school, my mom pushed me to do drama because, again, I was loud, had a lot of energy. She was like, just be loud on stage. People might like that. And then that's when I decided that I wanted to be a actress, performer, make people laugh for a living, because it's kind of addictive, the laughs you get. You get that first laugh and you just want more.
Let's talk about the first laughs you get in your special, Comedians of the World. You start right in talking about your body, about being fat. Listen.
So I'll just say it for you guys. I'm a fat lady. And I just want you guys to know that I know that you know. And there's always someone who feels bad for me who's like, oh no, she knows. Yeah, I know, and I'm okay with it. I'm a happy fat lady. Truly, I will steal your dinner, lie about it, and take you out to a second dinner. I think the real issue is I'm dishonest and a little bit of a hamburglar.
What made you decide to start your comedy special there?
So I didn't have like an incredible amount of time between getting the offer to do it and then actually filming it. So I spent a weekend featuring for my friend Carly Aquilino, who is also on Girl Code with me. We were doing 5 shows in Nyack, New York. So I spent those 5 shows. I like picked out the material I wanted to do, the material that I thought would fit best together to encapsulate what I was trying to say. And then I just spent the 5 shows reordering things until it felt right. And I decided to start off with the fat material because I think I do like 13 minutes of it, which is a lot. And I get that it's a lot, but I wanted to make a point that like you don't hear about it a lot in the way that I present it. And I wanted to do a lot of the material just so you could truly get a feel of who I am if this is the first time you've been introduced to me. But yeah, it felt good to load it in the front.
Yeah, and I thought at first as I was watching the special, and I did watch it, at first I thought that it was a lot, and then I thought, well, wait a minute, one of your favorite comedians was the late John Panette, and all of his comedy was literally either about food or about his experiences as a guy who was fat. I'm not sure why it is that I thought it was a lot for you, but not for John. I don't know if it's a gender thing or what.
'Cause I'm a woman.
It's a gender thing, yeah.
I think so. I think a lot of times, I think all of the time women are criticized harder than men. And I have a joke about it where, like, fat men can get on stage, talk about their weight, and nobody feels bad for them. And no one's like, oh, God, why does he keep talking about being fat? Like, we get it. It's just like, no, he's so funny that he's talking about his weight. And women, it'll be like, why are you talking about your weight? Why are you talking about your genitalia? Why are you talking about sex? Why are you talking about food? Why are you talking about your hair? And it's like, well, what do you want me to talk about?
Right.
You know, what do you want?
We're also kind of comfortable, I think, with, like, the funny fat guy as a trope, whether it's, you know, Ernie Sabella or Kevin James or W.C. Fields. Like, it's one of these old, old tropes that we've just kind of gotten used to. How did you, or did you, have to get comfortable with the idea of joking about being fat? What was that like?
I didn't have to get comfortable, per se. I spent a long time making audiences comfortable about me talking about my weight. So I really wanted to do fat jokes, and I was doing them around town in LA where I live, and I started to notice that anytime I would say I'm fat, like, people in the audience would audibly go, "Aww," or "You're not fat, you're beautiful, girl, stop it." And then it was just really frustrating because you say the word fat, and when a man says it, nobody's like, oh no, you're burly, you're husky, stop it, boy, stop.
No, we're like, yep, you are. That's right. I'm glad you said it because I was about to.
So yeah, it was just I had to figure out how to make an audience not feel bad for me so they could enjoy what I was talking about. And it was a long journey to figuring that out.
I'm curious as to what that journey was like, not just for an audience, but also, you know, for you. I mean, some comedians joke about things on stage that are very personal because they've kind of worked through them or they are working through them. And I wonder what that was like for you in terms of being able to look at yourself in the mirror and say, I'm sexy, I'm beautiful, all those things.
I've never not thought I was sexy. I've never looked in, like, of course I have days where I'm like, ugh, you piece of trash. I feel like everybody does. But for the most part, I get dressed and I go, I look good. Oh, wait, can I say that word?
We can fix it. It's all right.
Okay. I look in the mirror and I'm like, I look great. I look beautiful. I, you know, date people. I have sex. I've never had a conversation with a partner where they're like, girl, you're too big, because they like what they see and they're with me for a reason. But like, I did have some weird little hangups. Like, I didn't love wearing bathing suits. Sometimes I'd wear a cardigan in the summer because I was like, oh, God forbid they see my arms. And then I woke up one day and was like, God, like, who cares if someone sees my arms? Who cares if someone sees me in a bathing suit? A body is a body. There's also worse bodies. There's better. Who cares? I'm just going to live for me. And then I had that realization. I was like, oh, it took me 30 some odd years to get there. I want to talk about that. So that's why I think that was why I wanted to talk about it so badly. And then the feedback I've gotten from a lot of other fat women is, oh, I went through the same journey. You wear a crop top in your special. I want to wear a crop top. And it's like, well, girl, go do it. Just live your life.
Was there any kind of a learning curve? I also wonder if the curve was recognizing when you're on stage that you have power, like being able to make people laugh about something their, you know, their brain tells them, you're not allowed to laugh at this. That's powerful.
It feels good when people laugh at some of my dirtier stuff or some of my more risque stuff. It does feel really great. And then when they don't laugh, you're like, oh, no, they hate me. So it's powerful, but then the power truly can get sucked away from you so quickly.
More of Joshua's conversation with comedian Nicole Byer is ahead. I'm Todd Zwillikin for Joshua Johnson. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Babbel. Have you always wanted to speak a new language? Whether it's for travel, work, or brain training, Babbel's 10 to 15-minute lessons will get you speaking confidently in your new language. Choose from Spanish, French, and more. You'll learn through real-life dialogues, speech recognition, and interactive trainers. And Babbel's spaced repetition method actually makes you remember what you've learned. Download the app or go to Babbel, Babbel.com, to try Babbel for free. This message comes from NPR sponsor ADT. America's trusted home security company can help protect you against break-ins, fires, and carbon monoxide. 24/7 emergency response when you need it most. More at ADT.com.
What does it take to start something from nothing? And what does it take to actually build it? I'm Guy Raz. Every week on How I Built This, I speak with founders behind some of the most inspiring companies in the world. Find it on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is 1A. I'm Todd Zwillik, in for Joshua Johnson. Today, we're listening to a conversation Joshua had with comedian Nicole Byer. She's the host of the Netflix show Nailed It and one of 47 comedians featured in the special Comedians of the World. Let's get back to that conversation.
In terms of the special, there's something about the way that you present yourself on stage and also the jokes that you tell that kind of acknowledges that when people are othered, they're put into this box. Mm-hmm. And the whole set, and correct me if I'm off base, but it feels like a lot of that set is designed to either accept the box or blow up the box.
I try to make it a little like a 30 minutes of a view into what an other is like. So I spent a lot of time talking about being fat. And then I talk about being black and traveling to places where I'm the only black person there. And then I close with like this airplane story where I don't think it's ever happened to anybody else. So it's like another other thing.
Not to me. I hope never, ever.
So, yeah, like I made a choice to include material that encapsulated who I am and how the world views me and how I, you know, in turn, view myself through the eyes of other people.
One of the big conversations that's been surrounding comedy, and I know that you've been aware of all this, there's been a lot of stand-up comics that have been in the news lately. You know, Louis C.K. complained about what he called PC culture after the sexual harassment allegations made against him. There's a whole thing with Kevin Hart no longer hosting the Oscars after he made homophobic tweets. They came to light. He's been kind of struggling to make people happy with his apologies, including on his show on SiriusXM Satellite Radio, where he dealt with it kind of in his own forum. We've talked with stand-up comedians on the show before about the changing and shifting nature of comedy, how some jokes maybe aren't evergreen and comedians have to kind of adapt to these times. How do you see it in terms of what's considered funny and the way that that's shifting? How do you deal with that?
I think you can talk about anything you want. I think you can make jokes about anything you want, but I think you have to have a take. I think the take has to be funny. I think the take has to be not the first thing that pops in your head, but maybe you got to sit on it for a little bit. I don't understand why a lot of comics need to talk about, you know, gay people or trans people, especially when they don't have those people in their lives. So how are you going to talk about something where you don't have the experience with it? So, like, that doesn't make sense to me. And I do think people are a little PC, but, you know, I also think that times are a-changing and we should adapt to things. And if somebody says this is offensive to me, I don't think your first response should be like, well, it's funny, it's my comedy. I think maybe you take a step back and be like, well, let me see why it's offensive to you. But then again, like, some of my jokes are offensive to people, you know. Sometimes I'm a little too vulgar and sometimes people don't want to hear about sex. And I think instead of canceling people or getting angry with people, I think you can voice your opinion, but also understand that that's not for you and money talks. And if you're not buying a ticket to see that person, that impacts them.
There's a video that you did that's been viewed quite a bit. Let me play a little clip of that. And in the video, you play an actress who's gone on an audition.
I love what you're doing. I love what you're doing. I have an adjustment, if that's okay. How can I say this? I need you to be more urban.
What?
This role calls for like a really urban, ethnic black person. Can you be that for me?
Sure. Yes, I can.
That's great. We're still rolling.
LaShawanda, did you get those clams I asked for?
Ooh, child, I got them clams. I got everything on that list you gave me.
Good, LaShawanda. You know, parties aren't complete without clams.
Okay, let's stop right there. Hey, Nicole, I need you to be blacker. Do you understand what I mean when I say blacker?
No, I'm sorry, I don't.
Do you know how to be sassy? Yes, let me see. Yeah, sassy, that's great. Sassy, I want you to take that, go right into it. I love that. Sass it up.
Sassy.
Okay, so what inspired this sketch? This was made in 2013,
mm-hmm.
And I've never been on an audition like this before, but I could feel everything in me saying yes and amen as you were going through this story. Where did this story come from?
It came from actual auditions that I had been on where people would say coded things like, can you be sassier, urban, have more street, more edge? And I'd be going out for things like, you know, the black hooker or black bus driver or whatever, where you're just there for a quick laugh. And I had this one audition where the casting director was like, Nicole, I want you to be as black as possible. And if you go too black, I'll bring you back. And I was like, what does that mean? If I go too black, like, what is too black
like
for
you? Like,
if
your credit score starts to drop, we'll just
truly,
cut you
off. Or if I, like, pull out a gun or something, I'm like, Crips for life. Like, what do you mean?
Do you find that that's getting easier, that stereotype is changing? And we've talked to some directors on this program, Lena Waithe and Barry Jenkins, kind of about their work, and we know that they have a unique take on presenting characters of color. It would seem, we had a long conversation about Black Panther last year when it came out in February. Right, so there's been this conversation for the last, going on a year now, about how much Hollywood has arrived at this kind of new moment for depicting characters of color.
I mean, it's crazy to me because it's not a new moment. We, in the 90s, had a plethora of black characters who were all over the map. You know, you had Living Single, you had Family Matters, The Cosby Show, you had Martin, you had The Jamie Foxx Show, The Parkers, Moesha. You had so many girlfriends, so many different levels of and different types of black people on television being represented. And then it all kind of went away. And I think people forget about that heyday of, like, these great, beautiful black shows. And then we're like, they went away, and now we're trying to do the same. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, now we're trying to correct this mistake that has happened where there were no black leads or whatever.
Yeah.
So I think it's taking time to get to the point where it was, but I think it's happening slower. I mean, BET is coming out with some really cool stuff that I'm excited about. You know, HBO has Chewed Up Queens and Insecure. Blackish is on the air. Ken of Bears now has a deal with Netflix, so hopefully we'll have more black content on Netflix. So I think it's happening slowly, but like we were already at a great place. And I think people forget that.
Nicole Byer, the host of Nailed It on Netflix and also one of the comedians featured in the Netflix series, Comedians of the World. Nicole, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for talking to us.
Thank you.
This conversation was produced by Jonquilin Hill and edited by Miranda Fulmore. To learn more about them and the rest of the team, you can visit the website at the1a.org/staff. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington. It's distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Todd Zwillick, in for Joshua Johnson. Thanks so much for listening. This is 1A.
Angie Thomas went from church secretary to best-selling author with her book, The Hate U Give.
Dang, I just can't come out the house now and look any kind of way. Somebody's going to be like, Angie Thomas was in Kroger in her robe. What? You know, I can't do that.
She tells me what's in book number 2 this week on It's Been a Minute from NPR.